Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. We'll go ahead and get started. Welcome everyone to the Thursday, March 21st, 2024 work session for the Planning Commission, City of Sisters. I hereby call this meeting to order. First order of business is determination of a quorum. Looks like we've got five commissioners present. So we do indeed have a determination, or we do indeed have a quorum. Next item is adoption of the agenda. Do I hear any motion to adopt this evening's agenda?
I'll motion to adopt this evening's agenda.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Next item of business is visitor communication. This is time provided for individuals wishing to address the Planning Commission regarding issues not already on the agenda. Do we have anyone in the audience or on Zoom tonight that would like to address the commission with items that are not on this agenda for the evening?
I can confirm that there is no one over Zoom.
Okay. And is there anyone in the audience? I don't have a clear view of the audience.
Not seeing anybody.
Okay. We'll go ahead and move along, and I'll go ahead and hand it over to staff for our work session. Thank you.
Chair Seymour, Matthew Martin, City of Sisters Community Development Department. So I share my screen and get set up here. I'll just acknowledge Chair Seymour as I take over the screen here in the room. If you have any questions, please speak up because we don't have clear visuals on you. But good afternoon, commissioners, those members of public that are attending either online or here in person. I would like to welcome you here to tonight's workshop regarding some proposed text amendments to Sisters Development Code chapters 1.3, the definitions, and substantively chapter, and I have a typo here, chapter 2.12 Sun Ranch Tours Commercial District. This is a continuation of the planning and preparation for a forthcoming public hearing. Our original workshop was held on March 7th, where we provide a general overview of the proposed amendments, give you a lay of the land, the location of the property, some of the summary of the proposed amendments and the review process. But at that previous workshop, the commission rightfully identified that wanted a little bit more time to understand the scope of the project and the review process, given that while it looks like that there are a substantive number of changes, the scope of it is largely limited to a few substantial changes, but also recognizing that this is an applicant-initiated text amendments, whereas what you're most familiar with are city-initiated amendments. So I'm glad we're taking this additional time to make sure that you have the foundation on the project and before we move forward. So I'm prepared to kind of walk through some of the background, identifying the substantive aspects of the proposal, and then the next steps. But throughout, I intended this to be a dialogue rather than just a staff presentation. So if there's any questions that come up along the way, please let me know and we can address those in time. So again, recognizing that we had a prior workshop on March 7th, and instead of holding the public hearing as scheduled today, that public hearing was canceled in favor of this additional discussion. And that public hearing will be rescheduled when the time is right and the Planning Commission is prepared to move forward. But I want to first start with, reacquainting where the location of the Tourist Commercial District is located. Full name is Sun Ranch Tourist Commercial. By reference, we typically refer to it as Tourist Commercial. It's located in the northeast part of town, at the intersection of East Barclay Drive and Camp Polk Road, and comprised of three properties, the entirety of one lot, identified a lot one on the image, and then portions of two other lots to the north of lot one. So a small area, just over 6 acres, and three properties that are encumbered or located within the district or subject to any standards within the text of the district. So again, just introduction that what the proposal before you and will be before you have a public hearing are amendments to the chapter 1.3, the definitions chapter of the development code, and chapter 2.12, the Sun Ranch Tourist Commercial District. As indicated by the applicant, the purpose of the amendments is to expand and clarify the types of uses that are allowed in the district and to make other edits for consistency with other and the majority of the development code for consistency and formatting. The image I have up before you is the red line or track changes version, which identifies the text to be removed with strike through and the text to be added with underline. It will be this addendum or this exhibit that we'll be using kind of for the specifics of the and analysis of the particular changes. However, the applicant has provided a matrix of the changes identifying the sections being changed, the existing standard, the proposed and changed standard, and some explanation as to why. So great reference, but I do want to emphasize that when we're talking about the actual text, we're looking at this Exhibit A to Addendum 1. So what I'd like to do is walk you through what I've, as staff, have identified as the substantive changes to the proposal. So when you look at that exhibit in particular, you're seeing a lot of changes. And when you, throughout the exhibit, there are a lot of changes, but most of those staff finds to be the reformatting of the chapter from what its configuration now to more match what the other chapters of the development code are structured with the use of tables rather than individual text and subsections and other changes like that. So highlighting the substantive changes that are proposed. First is the addition of a new definition to our definition section, that being lodging establishment.
Matt, so on that,
yeah,
is that this definition change would apply to all of Sisters?
Correct. So this is a new definition that where it's used would apply to all of Sisters. So where it's used elsewhere in the development code.
So changing the definition of lodging establishment, if we did that, then RVs would, everywhere lodging establishment appears, RV parks would be allowed?
No. No. So this is separate from RV park.
I thought that was under RV park was under the definition of the new definition of lodging establishment.
No.
Am I making
So I'm glad we're having this conversation. Okay. So the intent and the language of this amendment does not incorporate RV parks, but rather it's as proposed is any hotel, motel, resort, building, or structure that is used to provide sleeping accommodations to the public for charge. And recognizing that there's also a separate RV park definition in the development code today.
Okay.
And Matt, I was looking at this earlier today, and so we don't have lodging establishment in our definitions today, but it is also not referenced anywhere else in the code right now, is that correct?
That's correct.
So it's not, if we were to add this definition, we wouldn't be imposing the definition anywhere else at this time.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, so to say it differently or to reiterate that, if the proposed changes were adopted as drafted, for example, the only location in the code where lodging establishment would be used currently is in the tourist commercial district. Elsewhere, the terminology of hotel or motel is the language that's used today in for example, our commercial districts.
So I have a question. So defining lodging, hotels, motels, resorts, buildings or structures used to provide sleeping accommodations. So a building, I mean, the definition of a resort. Do we have a definition of a resort? We have a. I know what the definition of hotel. Do we have a definition of a resort building or structure used to provide accommodations to the public?
So with me sharing my screen, I have my limitations to go to my my computer. So I'm asking Scott Woodford.
I don't see any definition of resort.
Or building or structure. So my question is a blocked up trailer considered a lodging?
Yeah, so we do have definitions of building and structure. So we'll be using those as our terminology. I'd like to go to the structure definition.
Would you rather us to keep our questions till the end?
Yeah, this is the one that's well, I'd like to have the dialogue. I think it's useful along the way. It's just that this is involving a little bit of research. It's a little clunky with the technology. So there is to be an argument to be made that if a trailer or some other temporary structure were located in or on the ground is kind of the basis for the definition of structure, that a trailer that's off its wheels, that's put into place, immobile, could be defined as a structure. So within the development code, a structure is any object constructed in or on the ground. Structures include buildings, decks, fences, towers, flagpoles, signs, and other similar objects. Structure does not include uncovered paved areas or vegetative landscaping material.
So a tent on a platform could be a structure?
So the structure would be, in that case, the platform that it's built upon. The tent itself, I'm thinking about how the interface with building code. Tents are not construed as building subject to building code, but an argument can be made that that tent provides the sheltering or is a building in a official sense.
The information, historical information, was that the applicant was talking about a glamping experience and glamping. And I don't know what the definition is of glamping. Usually, I have a definition.
Yeah.
It's like a tent built on a platform with a bed and electricity. Right. In it.
I think that glamping is
car camping.
More of a term of art or a description of a way a use is used or a quality for example. But knowing that you're really, and I appreciate drilling down in the merits of the text that's being proposed. This is an opportunity to say, if you have question, not for this discussion, but concern over how something is worded or how it may be construed, there is opportunity through any recommendation to the council to provide some additional clarity. Not hearing any others, going to move to what is likely the bulk of the substantive changes, and that's related to the changes to uses that would be permitted in the district if approved as proposed. First, just walking my way through the table that's on the screen, is the removal of cottages as a specific use. And the intent of removing cottages is recognition that under the newly proposed definition of lodging establishment, such cottages would be an allowed use. So cottages, cabins, or those structures used for lodging. So the need for that redundancy of cottage is would not be necessary. Second, removing the use category of office. Right now, as allowed in the code, a new office building could be established on that property. The applicant's intent would not be to allow an office building, but more office in relation to as or accessory to other uses. So for example, office in association with an RV park, a hotel, restaurant or other similar use. So recognizing that it would be more so allowed as an accessory use, not a standalone office use. Next being the inclusion, of course, as of lodging establishment based on that definition. So this would be capturing those hotel, motel, other lodging related uses and the use of buildings or structures. They've also proposed to include hostel, and recognizing that that is a lodging use that could fall under lodging establishment. However, the Sisters Development Code does have a specific definition for hostel. So this is just recognition that that other type of lodging use could be allowed within the district, and honoring that that specific definition. Next is RV park, including caretaker's residence. This would be a new use that's not otherwise allowed in the district. And do want to recognize that RV parks are allowed in other districts, our open space district, our downtown, our highway commercial districts, and any RV park is subject to some specific use standards that are already in the code. So it's not, there are sideboards or parameters that apply to any RV use, RV park use in the code. The addition of a park use. So this would be public or private park. And there is a definition of park in the development code that provides for those open space recreational facilities. I'm summarizing, but that's the intent of allowing a park as we understand it to be. And then lastly, the removal of specific uses that are identified as permitted uses, but are really accessory to other uses that may be established on the property, such as a sauna, laundry establishment, multi-use trails, decks, and similar. So staff recognizes that these are would be accessory to a variety of other uses, the development of a property, having these amenities, I'd call them, in conjunction with a primary use of the property. So this is an effort to kind of what I construe as being consistent with other districts that allow for accessory uses and recognize these would be accessory. Okay. Moving to the changes to development standards. I want to recognize on the table that some of the numbering would change with the proposed amendments. So you may see where numbering has changed, but the standards remain the same. That's just reorganizing as sections move around or are eliminated. But do want to note that currently within the development standards, there would be a change as proposed to the setbacks from Barclay Drive and Camp Polk Road. Currently in the code is a 20-foot setback. The applicants propose to reduce that to 10 feet. There is recognition by staff that this 10-foot setback from street-side property lines is consistent with other commercial districts.
Would there be no on-street parking on the side of the highway then?
Not
side of Camp Polk?
That's not in relation to this particular setback standard, but currently there there is no on-street parking allowed along Camp Polk Road or Barclay Drive.
Okay.
And moving on, the section 2.12.1000, there are currently some special use standards or special standards for certain uses that go above and beyond what the general use and development standards are or special use standards. The applicant's proposing to eliminate those in their entirety, in part recognizing that laundry establishments and cottages are being eliminated as specific uses. But I do want to note that within these standards is a required 50-foot setback for the neighborhood market and laundry establishment uses. So with the removal of that setback, it'd refer back to the 10-foot setback that's being proposed. And also there was a 1,000 square foot maximum for any neighborhood market that was established in this district. So with the removal of that, we'd revert back to the specific use standards for any neighborhood market which is a maximum of 6,000 square feet. And then lastly, the removal of section 2.12.1100. That would be the district specific 1900s rural farm ranch house design standards. Those design standards are unique to the tourist commercial district and are different, obviously, than the 1800s Western Frontier design standards that apply to all other commercial districts. So with the removal of this district-specific design criteria, it would revert back to requiring compliance with the 1880s design aesthetic.
When was the existing barn that's out there constructed? You have a year? Where the distillery is?
The distillery on the property to the north. That was approved in modern times.
Was that existing in rehab or was it a new barn?
I haven't got the slightest idea. It looks,
I think it's a new barn.
It looks like it's a ranch building and not a Western motif building.
So it would have been, at that time, it would have been subject to the 1900s design aesthetic. Correct.
And is it and is it a 20-foot setback? Do you know?
I don't know its specific location, but to be in a distillery, the distillery wouldn't matter.
It's right across Sun Ranch. So.
Yeah. It's, you know, just looking at, and Scott's looking up on mapping. Yeah. No, I appreciate if we could get an answer right away. That'd be great. But we can follow up on that.
The reason I asked about parking is that initially, there was no parking allowed on Sun Ranch either. And then everybody parked there anyway, which could very well happen if there's a market or something else and they want to make it convenient. They're going to park on the side of the road.
Right.
And so, then they widened the asphalt. Property owners ended up paying for widening the asphalt a little bit to allow parking on Sun Ranch.
Okay.
And then there's a bunch of large, like River Rock or for drainage, and people park in that and the asphalt, and it goes all over the street. So,
certainly a consideration when development is proposed on any of these properties and in any location where there are on-street parking limitations. You know, so for one example is that, you know, when we're counting minimum parking requirements and compliance with those standards, there are some exceptions or recognition of available on-street parking to provide your required parking minimums.
Yes.
In an instance where there's not on-street parking allowed, then we'd be looking for all of that parking to be accommodated either on-site or at a separate off-site location, but not on-street. And so it would be subject to what the standards or the design requirements are for those street cross sections at the time.
Matt, could I just back up a little bit and just clarify so that the new code would allow for a 6,000 square foot neighborhood market? The way the changes play out would allow for that?
The way it plays out, yeah. So with the removal of that maximum of 1,000 square feet in this district, it'd revert back to our code-wide standard for neighborhood markets, which is a maximum of 6,000 square feet.
Hey, Matt, this is Jeff. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
I want to speak to Tom's question about the distillery. We did actually review and change or modify the code language for that distillery. At the time, distilleries were not permitted based in that zone. And so the city was the applicant on that one, but there's a particular part of the code that says, and I saw it earlier, says cideries wineries, breweries, and distilleries are permitted in that particular zone. That was language that we added. And then we also went through and approved that project based on the current criteria at the time, just for historical context.
And staying on that theme and that question, what Scott's been able to provide in part is a street view of the Google Street View of the property, just to show that there's an older barn structure that was on the property prior to the redevelopment. The issue we may have is looking through the property records to know what the build date of that structure is, because once it's modified to some extent, it's re-identified as a when that remodel took place. So I think what we might find is that it's showing a build date of 2010 when it was originally an older structure.
And was that structure where that distillery is now?
Generally, yeah. Okay. But we can certainly provide some additional detail into the future.
I noticed in the when you showed the plot plan or the lots, it looks like there is no access to the that comes through the business park, that
Sun Ranch.
There is no access to Sun Ranch from this new property. Lot 2 and Lot 3.
So there is access to Lot 2 off of Sun Ranch. There's that loop, and maybe it's a bit blurry, but there's a loop drive off of Sun Ranch.
Oh yeah, right there.
Yeah.
That's a different lot.
Thank you.
But that's another different lot?
That's the same property as the distillery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so one point of clarification. So Lots 2 and 3 do extend beyond the district. So, for example, Lot 2, yeah. So Emmy's looking at Lot 3, which is the triangle, we'll call it. So that's the entirety of Lot 3, but only that southeast corner is located within this district.
That's the big blank space is the flyover area, right?
Right. Yeah, the runway protection zone for Sisters Eagle Air Airport. And then Lot 2 similarly extends beyond the boundary of the tourist commercial district.
Could you have a driveway through the approach? Is that legal if there's no structure or anything? And the highest thing would be a vehicle coming?
Yeah, the driveway, I don't see any issue with establishing a driveway within that runway protection zone. It most often relates to any use or buildings within that that overlay.
So the tourist commercial zone is just the red outlined area?
Correct.
Not that triangle that I'm seeing?
Not the portion beyond the red boundary, correct.
And do you know if there's a reason why that wasn't included in the tourist commercial zone?
I'd have to look back to the origins of this boundary that was established. I know that Lots 2 and 3 were not created at the time the district was created or established or adopted, I should say. So that could be a reason why a portion of it extends beyond the boundary of the district, but we can certainly look into that further. Okay, that's the extent of my overview of the substantive changes. Just wanted to cover a couple other aspects of what was in your meeting packet. So I'll pause again for any questions now, but we could.
I've always got questions.
If we want to stay, we could keep. Yeah, please.
So just doing a quick calculation. So a 6,000 square foot convenience market could be 6 by 50.
Neighborhood market.
My math right? 60 feet wide by 50 feet long, or it's some compromise.
That'd be less. Yeah, be 60 by 100.
Yeah, 60 by 100.
60 by 100. Okay, thank you very much. And is there a, do we have a definition of the difference between a community market or a neighborhood market and a convenience store?
We do have two different definitions. Convenience market first is a store selling a limited variety of basic items, including packaged foods, snack foods, beverages, and non-food products, also known as a mini mart. And then moving to neighborhood market. Is a small grocery store, 6,000 square feet or smaller. Grocery store. And I think the idea is, you know, that we're drilling down to the concept is that it's provides all of those products of a grocery store, but on a smaller scale. Grocery store is a store organized into departments offering a wide variety of food, including meats, produce, dairy, and baked goods, along with canned and packaged goods, as well as various non-food items such as household cleaners, pharmacy products, and pet supplies.
That's a neighborhood store.
That's a grocery store. So I'd be looking at that type of model on a smaller, on a limited scale.
I hate to ask you to define something else, but what is auto-dependent use defined as in the code? I was trying to Google it here in my Wi-Fi.
Yeah, this is great. And now maybe a good transition to the included in the staff report were a variety of definitions that found that may be beneficial to based on the questions that were asked previously and specifically related to these changes. So auto-dependent use as defined in the code is a use, services, motor vehicles, and would not exist without them, such as vehicle repair, gas station, quick lube service facilities, a car wash, and auto and truck sales. But I appreciate the questions. That's what we're here
to do. So in other words, like an RV park wouldn't exist without auto-dependent use.
No, that's something different. Auto-dependent is more like a drive-through or gas station. They come and go.
Right.
You drive in, you do your stuff, and you drive away. The RV park falls under a different definition, which they have right here for us on page 3 of our handout.
I just don't understand why they're different. I'm still not seeing the difference there, I guess, is mine.
You could drive into an RV park, detach, and drive away.
Yes, but the auto-dependent, it's dependent on your automobile being able to get in and out and everything for them to do business. You know, like McDonald's drive-through, the gas station are good examples of that, because without your car, they wouldn't even exist.
Same with an RV. Without unless you have a self-driving RV.
So
if you have a trailer, you got to pull it with something.
Yes, but it still falls under a different. Yes, I hear what you're saying.
We want to be just cautious that we're not kind of beginning to deliberate and kind of the merits of any policy or what. So I just putting that out there and as a reminder.
I'm
but
just trying to
but
get the definition.
I think it's a good dialogue to be had and kind of really evaluating kind of the merits or differences or similarities, and not predetermining or drawing a conclusion, but recognizing that not any, but most lodging establishments or those that cater to travelers may be also construed as auto dependent or similar, meaning that if you're traveling to a hotel, how are you getting there? Now, of course, there's alternative means, but it could be construed that any development that doesn't have alternative ways to get there other than a vehicle would be auto dependent. So, but we can certainly drill down on that and again discuss the similarities and differences and identify if there's reason to explicitly prohibit it in this district or not.
Seems like all the examples in the definition are where you bring your car and their car is the focus of the service provided at that location. You're talking about vehicle repair, gas station, quick lube services, car wash. You know, those are things that are generally that the car is the absolute focus, whereas an RV might be a more of a kind of an ancillary kind of focus on the car.
Transportation method.
Yeah.
So this this thing, this piece of document here with all the red lines in it, this is the existing code?
It takes the existing code, and the red and underline and strike through are the proposed changes.
Yeah. So in the code, it talks about Sun Ranch tourist commercial zone, and it talks about a maximum of 30 cottage units. And I know we don't have any plans turned in about what's going to be on this piece of property, but listening to the applicant who gave the informational talk last, it sounds like it's substantially changing because they want to add the possibility of RV lots and van slots and maybe some permanent or some cabin slots and maybe some camping. But just doing some my quick math, it looks like that would be substantially adding to how many people would be on this site at one time. And is there a city code or requirement for if you have a RV park or a camping place that you have to provide structure that has this many bath toilets and this many showers in it, and you have to provide for a laundry facility? Because I mean, it says that in here, but that's all scratched out. So it's not a requirement, but it was a requirement the way I'm reading.
Yeah, so I think there's two points that you've raised is that one, existing code has the maximum of 30 cottages or cabins. Pulling that out and adding RV park as a particular use or lodging establishment as a particular use, neither one of those put a cap on the number of units that can be established within those uses. But in particular to an RV park and if restroom facilities, we do have a requirement in the code now that the park shall provide toilets, lavatories, and showers for each sex as required by state building agency administrative rules. So we'd be looking at building code division to identify what that appropriate ratio per we'll call them unit or space.
I got you. I guess it's not the application, the explanation, it makes reference to high-end RV park. And that's, I make a definition of that because I have an RV and I've been to parks and I've never been to I don't know what high-end really means. But my point, not that's not even a point. My concern is I've been to places where on a Friday night, there's lots of RVs waiting to get in because they have to pull in, stop, and go into the office. And so sometimes you need room. And I know we've, Sisters have seen a problem with a coffee drive-through that sometimes the vehicles waiting encroach into the street, which makes it, and I know they're not supposed to, but they don't care. So my concern would be for Camp Hope that traffic stopped trying to get in, and I don't even know if we make a code about that or a regulation about that, or that's just a concern of mine.
So to that point, recognizing that within it, all of that would be, well, I guess a couple of points. There is opportunity with, you know, staying generally within the parameters of the proposed changes to recommend some refinement of the standard or some additional standards that give you kind of a addressing your concerns with the adequacy of facilities, adequacy of queuing on site. Also acknowledging that within our code for site plan review, so any new commercial development, we talk about appropriate vehicle and pedestrian bicycle circulation and adequacy of public infrastructure and adequacy on site. So those would be standards we'd be reviewing it against, and that would be all subject to the scale and the overall design of the site.
And just in addition to that, another tool that we could use is requirement of a traffic impact study that, you know, takes a look at the number of trips to the site, and we could have that pay particular respect to queuing issues and recommendations for that. So that could be something we could do with this. Not, we don't write it into the code, but that could be associated with a site-specific development proposal.
I know the applicant before mentioned we were concerned about staying, how long of a stay, because it, the difference between an RV park and a mobile home park. A mobile home park is long-term, and I've seen places people stay in RV parks for a long, long time. So, and I know we probably can't write that in the code, but that was also something that would be handled with the planning
individual project review.
Yes, about, you know, what is the term limit, stay limit, you know?
Sure.
2 weeks, a month, and what does that mean? Okay, I'm going to drive around the corner for, and I'll be back, mm-hmm. and now I get another month. And so it's interesting. And the other thing was it made mention in here about the convenience, the neighborhood market and the laundromat closing at 10 p.m. But it's in here in code. And that's stricken. So that would be gone.
Right. So that would revert back to, well, I guess we don't necessarily have business hours within our development code. I'm not sure about municipal code. So it'd revert back to any other related impact related regulations within the city. But there, I just want to acknowledge again that there is some with any recommendation that you make to the city council, there's opportunity to either approve as proposed, reject as proposed, or somewhere in the middle with some components of it approved or recommending that it needs to be refined or reworded with a particular sideboard.
What we're talking about here is the code that we're going to use eventually to weigh against when the applicant says they want to put in a RV park and stuff. Then we're going to refer back to this code to approve, disapprove, or you guys will. So we're just writing right now just the standards that they're going to be judged against. They're not saying they're going to put an RV park, but if they do.
Correct.
Or they have the capability of, but
right.
haven't applied to do so just yet.
Correct. Yeah, this is to establish the framework that any new or subsequent development proposal would be reviewed or evaluated against. Yep.
I mean, but my point is, so it says if they're going to build a market in the old code, it was the market had to close at 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
So if they do build the market based on the new application, the new changes, then they don't have to close at all.
Right. It'd be whatever our current code is for the city.
Yeah.
So if that came out louder than I expected.
What?
Yeah. My understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that all of those points we can talk about during deliberations, which is not today. And if there are refinements that we would like to see in the code. So I was looking through other code today, just for an example. And I believe, and I'm sorry, it's so much information I don't have in front of me. I think it was the open space RV parks maybe, which then eventually just, I think, refers to Creekside Campground. I mean, that's the one that's in that category, had some qualifications in there around times and other details that if we thought that was appropriate, we could talk about that during deliberations and come up with more specific recommendations to move it forward. So there is a space for it to happen before approving the new code. Like we wouldn't.
Right, the public hearing allows you to do that.
Exactly. We don't, if there are things we feel that we don't want to let hang out there, because then it wouldn't be enforceable when the applicant came back in, we still have a chance to do that.
Oh, yes, after the public hearing.
As part of the public hearing,
right.
during deliberation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, so that's exactly true.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just questions at this point, right? Not deliberation.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Wanting to get a kind of a foundational understanding of what the scope of the proposal is, kind of the who, what, when, where, why, and begin to ask some of these clarifying questions or that we can answer tonight or be prepared for at a later date.
In prohibiting auto-dependent uses, what is the intent behind that? Like, what's our primary concern? Is it mainly queuing? Is it, do we?
Probably because of the traffic study and being on Barkley and.
Hey guys, could you please speak into the microphones? It's really difficult to hear you guys.
I had just asked what the intent was behind the idea of prohibiting auto-dependent uses. And I can imagine some, but maybe you guys can clarify.
Yeah, we don't have the at top of mind what the intent was to prohibit them here, but generally the concept is that you're limiting to the location of those types of uses where they can be located throughout the community. So select areas where traffic may be more conducive or prominent to be appropriate for auto-dependent uses,
for aesthetics,
all of those factors, noise, aesthetics, et cetera,
exhaust fumes.
Okay, we're taking advantage of this pause. Just kind of moving on to kind of more other general information that I provided in the staff report. The question was raised at the previous workshop, where are RV parks allowed currently in the code? As I noted before, but reiterating, RV parks are currently allowed in our open space district and the highway commercial district. Those are limited areas in proximity to the highways on either end of town. There was a map included in the staff report.
And on that map, who owns those?
It's a variety of ownerships, from state ownerships to city of Sisters ownership. It was brought up of Creekside Campground, city-owned properties, and then private ownerships. I believe a portion of it's owned by the federal government as well. So,
is that strip along 242? That's privately owned?
It's privately owned by the adjoining ranch property.
And I'm looking at it, I can't really tell. You know how wide that piece of property is?
I'd have to double check. I'm not going to guess.
But that's open space.
It's narrow. It's zoned open space. Yeah, but awfully narrow for any development potential.
Could be an RV.
I guess it could be. Subject to standards. Yeah, we'll call it. But
setbacks.
Yeah, it's a unique configuration of that zone district. It and the purpose and the history of it, I don't know at this point.
It was just an article in the Nugget about it, the piece of property.
Oh, really? Need to read up on it.
Bailey, I think.
Okay, as we try to get that depth measurement. Just want to note that a comment was made at the previous workshop regarding historic protection of the and the presence of historical buildings on the property. Recognizing that what's commonly referred to as the Conklin House does have some history and is, you know, with an association with people and significance to the community, and it's an old structure. It is not designated on the local inventory of historic places, nor is on the National Register of Historic Places. So absence of those designations, it's not subject to any preservation or protection standards.
I have a question that just pertains to me. Would this be the time to talk about my knowledge of the site and the people, or would I wait until we have the public hearing and do it then? I know the owners, I know the architect who worked on it.
Oh, in terms of whether you should be.
Yes, whether I should even be deliberating on this or.
This is a workshop.
I know, this is a workshop, so we're not really deliberating.
Yeah.
Why don't you kind of inquire with us, like before the meeting, and then we can help advise
okay.
you.
All right.
About whether you need to.
That's what I wanted to know.
Disclose it or not.
Okay.
Or step down or disclose.
Okay, carrying forward, just want to acknowledge the next steps. So at this point, the upcoming public hearing has not been scheduled. We wanted to hold off on getting that date certain and initiating any public notices to make sure that we have the grounding and understanding of the project that you desire before we move forward. So. If we determine we're ready to go, then we can get that scheduled and notices issued. And so we'll have the public hearing before the Planning Commission. At the close of the public hearing, we'll have deliberations. That's going to be that opportunity to really, certainly with any project, deliberate to a decision. But that's where you can really discuss and identify any aspects of the project that you're looking to support, not support, or support with changes. Just recognize that it's a bit different than a city-initiated project. So with city-initiated project, you go through that refinement of any of the code standards or code changes prior to the public hearing. So a lot of that work's done in advance during workshop. With the applicant-initiated project, you don't have that opportunity because it comes forward and limited in what kind of discussion you can have prior to the public hearing. But instead, that opportunity is there during deliberations. So it's just the sequencing and opportunities are different in its timing, but are still there. So I want to emphasize that to you, that you do have, it's not an up-down vote on the project, but rather can be quite detailed, and I expect it to be that. In fact, depending on how the public hearing plays out, there is that opportunity to close the public hearing and then come back for a standalone deliberation session at a subsequent meeting so that you can really digest all of the content of the record and go through a deliberate deliberation given the substance of the proposal. And then for your benefit and the community's benefit, that what the Planning Commission does is makes a recommendation that's then forwarded to the City Council where a subsequent public hearing is held. Additional testimony can be provided and will be contemplated by the City Council, who will then issue a final decision in the form of an ordinance. So that's the extent of my remarks, but again, happy to entertain any additional questions or perhaps, and if no additional questions, great. And just a head nod that we're in a position to move forward.
I have no more questions.
I don't have any more questions.
Really?
Seeing and hearing no more questions from the room here, Chair Seymour.
No further questions, but I just want to assure the commission that we will have a robust conversation and opportunity to deliberate during the hearing. And we've got the flexibility to continue that hearing to the degree that we feel we need to and are satisfied that the best possible product is decided upon. So just want to reassure everyone on that.
Yeah, and building on that, recognizing that with these legislative amendments, there's not a time clock or a limit on the time that you can take to review this project. So we're not up against a backstop of a clock, so that ample time can be taken to really evaluate and come to a good decision.
We know you guys put notice out for a meeting already. We appreciate you doing the work that you had to do to accommodate another workshop and all that.
Sure. Yeah. No problem. Important to make sure that you're in a position to feel comfortable moving forward.
Hey, Matt, I do have one final question. This is Jeff. In with respect to this process, in that we have an applicant that is not the city that's requesting code amendments. Was this the best process to move forward with, or would there have been an alternative?
I cannot think of an alternative process that we could go through. I think this is with respect to an applicant initiated request to change the code. I think this is our only process.
But I think he's talking about maybe land use changes instead of changing the code.
Like a zone?
Yeah, like a rezone. I don't know. Is that what you were talking about, Jeff?
I not specifically, mainly just from a process standpoint, just making sure that the path that we're on was the right path and the best path, based on the code changes that have been requested.
My response to that is, and just picking up on some input we've heard, is others have raised, well, why not just get a variance? Why not get a conditional use for a particular use that's not identified in the zone? Well, those are very specific processes and uses or have criteria. Those are not available to to establish a use that's not otherwise listed in the code. The appropriate process is to modify the code to accommodate, you know, any particular use that's desired for development within the community within that district. So I cannot find a alternative method or process for accommodating a use that's not otherwise currently allowed in a district.
I believe the packet you guys put out cited the Old Mill District and Northwest Crossing was both handled in this kind of fashion. You know, I mean, other cities have been successful in doing it this way, I guess. You know.
And while not in recent history, there have been similar projects here in Sisters that have amended small components of a district or allowed use to accommodate a particular desire or
made a whole new district like Sun Ranch Business Park.
And so the tourist commercial district is a product of one of those efforts. That was the creation of the tourist commercial district, the Sun Ranch residential district, and what's now the North Sisters Business Park.
Thank you. I'm satisfied with that.
And this is how the system's supposed to work. I mean, the state of Oregon requires municipalities like Sisters to have a planning commission made of citizens who aren't government employees to look at this stuff that somebody's presenting and then deliberate on it and make a recommendation. So
right.
The system works because it would be bad if we didn't have that system in place.
Right. And we're looking for you to identify if, I mean, just generally, is this good policy for City of Sisters to make these changes to the code? So what we'll come back with for the public hearing is a staff report that's beyond what we prepared now, but rather an evaluation of the merits of the application against our text amendment and legislative change criteria, our comprehensive plan policies, and any other applicable state and local standards.
I know you have to give us 7 days to look at that stuff. Do you have a timeline? Are we looking at another week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks? I mean, do you have a kind of a general ballpark timeline?
Tentatively, you know, subject to those notices, we're looking at April 18th for the public hearing. So getting the direction now to move forward, we'll put in motion those notices, and then that staff report will be available no less than 7 days, and we'll certainly try to get that out earlier if we can.
Thank you for doing a lot of homework for us, helping us to understand better and hopefully make good decisions.
That's what we're here for. Okay, well, we'll close, and thank you for your time tonight, and hand it back to Chair Seymour.
Thank you, Matt. Next item on the agenda is staff and commissioner comments. Does anybody have any additional comments unrelated?
I had a, if no commissioners have any, I have a couple. I'll just jump into them. We're still, we got two applications for the vacant planning commission position, and we're in the works to try to schedule those interviews. Looks like it'll happen the second week of April. So with any luck, I don't know if we want to have the public hearing for the tourist commercial zone be their first first night or not, but that potentially could line up. It's probably good, it's probably not enough time in between. Their first meeting would likely probably be in May, but stay tuned on that. We did get a contract signed with MIG, the consultants for the UGB work, and we're going to have our first kickoff meeting, consultant and staff, on April 2nd. So things will starting to get going with that. And then just wanted to alert you to this upcoming schedule. April 4th would be the next work session. And we have tentatively have the short-term rental proposed code amendments come back to you. And then Matt talked about April 18th being the public hearing for the tourist commercial code amendments. That would be a 5:30 p.m. meeting. And then May 2nd and 16th would be the following meetings after that, but we don't have anything definitive yet for that. So just want to get that on your radar screen.
You guys run out of work. We don't have to have two meetings a month.
There's no danger of that anytime soon. but if it did slow down, we would go down to one meeting a month like we used to do it. So that's all I have.
All right. Anybody else? Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. That was a productive session. Appreciate everybody participating. And with that, we're adjourned. Thanks.
Joy, wherever you are.